When I was 12 years old, my mother took Christmas away from me. It warped my life. I was scarred from that point on. I think one day I'm going to write a book and blame my parents for all my problems. Well, not really, but I bet I could make a good tearjerker out of that premise. You're listening to Longitude. It's Saturday, December 17th, 2005. I'm Darris McNeely. Well, we're fully into the Christmas season. And once again, we're confronted with all the symbols, the ads, the music, the crowds, and the spirit, the commercialism, and everything that makes up this season. I find that emotions run a little rampant during this season, and they seem to be running a bit more rampant this year because of the continuing cultural wars that we have in the United States, secularists against anything dealing with religion, especially Christian religion. And I've noticed this year around Christmas time that there seems to be a heightened controversy this year. I was noticing something recently that surrounds one of the cable news talk show hosts, Bill O'Reilly, who has a radio program called The Radio Factor. Mr. O'Reilly has made it his personal mission this year to go after those secularists who are trying to take Christmas out of the marketplace and out of people's lives. And in fact, on a recent broadcast of his, he seemed to make some very strong comments to all of those, saying that he would use all the power that he had on his radio and television programs to bring horror into the world of people who would diminish and denigrate the Christian Christmas holiday. Let me just read one part here from what he had said. He said, as he spoke about these individuals who are wanting to take Christmas out of the marketplace, he said, "They are on the run because I will put their face and their name on television, and I will talk about them on the radio if they do it. There is no reason on this earth that all of us cannot celebrate a public holiday devoted to generosity, peace, and love together. There's no reason on the earth that we can't do that. So we're going to do it. And anyone who tries to stop us from doing it is gonna face me." End of quote from Mr. O'Reilly. Well, happy holidays, Mr. O'Reilly. That seems to really rev up the spirit of the mood of the season as you and as he goes after those who are wanting to take the celebration of the season out of the life and out of the marketplace. Mr. O'Reilly's tirade is a heightened part of the ongoing cultural war that we have in the United States today, where many secularists and individuals who just hate religion, and especially any trappings of Christian religion, it seems today in the United States, want to remove any idea or any reference to God, to Jesus Christ, to Christmas in the current holiday season, to the Ten Commandments, and removing all of that out of the public square. Now, those of you that are familiar with the Longitude program and World News and Prophecy, you already know that Christmas is not a holiday that we are involved with, that we celebrate. In fact, we understand and teach that Christmas is not the birthday of Jesus Christ, that it is not a sanctioned holiday, holy day, as far as God and the Bible is concerned. You will find no reference in the Bible to Christmas and to the or a teaching or a command to observe it. You will not find December 25th mentioned in the Bible as a date upon which Jesus Christ was born. In fact, most scholars and any knowledgeable individuals know that Jesus was not born on December 25th. You don't have to go too far in our world today to find documented evidence stating that. Most everyone understands that. Nonetheless, that hasn't stopped people from adopting the day as a day on which to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, again, something that the Bible never tells us to do. But what we do in the United Church of God, what many other Christians do, is we observe the holy days of the Bible, the holy days that God gave to his people, ancient Israel, the days of the Lord that are mentioned in the Bible, both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, as days on which we honor Jesus Christ, and we honor God's plan and purpose and the whole meaning of life that God has for all of mankind. Those are the days that we observe. We don't get too involved in terms of observing. We don't get involved at all with Christmas and Easter and other traditional holidays of our society. So each year I find it rather interesting to watch the discussion that goes on in various circles about Christmas and about the religious aspects of it, as many people recognize that in our society today there's not much religion, at least from the commercial aspect and so much of what takes place. It is a very commercialized holiday. It is one that is driven by consumers, and the real, you know, any religious themes in there are those that seem to be rapidly diminishing. I even heard recently of one church in the southern part of the United States that was canceling Christmas on their Christmas service, which, because Christmas this year falls on a Sunday morning, and of course their Sunday morning service would normally take place, but they were canceling their Sunday morning service because it fell on Christmas in order to give people more time with their families. And the pastor who did that was getting a bit of flack from his own parishioners and other criticism from other religionists as well. And that is amusing, at least, to think about the fact that a pastor was canceling church services on Christmas Day, regardless of when it would fall. So that's another new twist this year. But Mr. O'Reilly and other talk show hosts' efforts to kind of go back and fight against the secularizing trends that are in our culture today are another dimension to the year-by-year situation that we see, where people bemoan the fact that Christ has been taken out of Christmas. Of course, I would say Christ was never in Christmas. He was never there to begin with. It's not a day that he sanctions. It's not a day that he tells his followers to observe at all. In fact, when you read very carefully the statements of Jesus in the New Testament, you will find that he pointed to the day of his death and the event of his death as the most important event in to observe. And he instituted the symbols and the means by which that could be observed on the night before he did die. And so the date of his birth is hidden, and the circumstances there of his birth are actually very clear. And when you do look into the scriptures in the book of Luke and Matthew and the accounts of the birth of Jesus Christ, you do find some very interesting principles and teachings that are important for anyone who wants to be a follower of Christ and his example and his teachings, that tell us far more about Christ than anything dealing with the Christmas celebrations that we see around us every year. In fact, the story of Christ's birth in the Gospels tells us many, many deep truths about God and about Jesus Christ and his example that should impact our lives every single day. One of them was the fact of his virgin birth, the idea and a fulfillment of the prophecies of the book of Isaiah that a virgin would conceive and bear a son. Gabriel appeared to Mary and announced that, and that created a whole new life situation for Joseph and Mary, the father and mother of Jesus Christ. But the idea that Christ was born of a virgin, fulfilling a long-held and known prophecy, is a very significant factor in terms of understanding God, God's purpose and his plan for bringing many sons to glory in his family, that God can make something from nothing, in the sense that spirit could transcend the spirit world and become flesh, and that the one who is identified in the book of John as the Logos in John 1:1, the Word became flesh, was born of a woman and became flesh, lived among us and died, and then was resurrected. But that idea of the virgin birth is a very important part of the story of Jesus Christ and his purpose for mankind that we need to understand and need to focus on at times. Also from the story of Christ's birth is the fact that he was born in a stable. He was there was no room in the inn when Mary and Joseph went to Bethlehem in response to the census that was being taken at that time of year by Caesar. That's why they were in Bethlehem. But they didn't make their lodgings in any comfortable establishment. They had to make their lodgings, because of the crowds in the city, in a manger or in a stable. Some might say that it was in a cave, and that could be a possibility as well, but it was something that was used for the animals to be housed in. That's a rather humble place for the Son of God to be born and to spend his first hours of his existence on this earth. He wasn't born into a palace. He wasn't born into a king's palace. He was born and lived his first hours in a stable with the animals, a very humble beginning. And that example of humility extended throughout his life and is left as a very important example for any who would seek to follow Jesus Christ. A third lesson to learn is the fact that when we find in Matthew's account of the wise men coming sometime after the birth of Christ, it wasn't on that night that he was born, it was sometime afterwards, and they were in a house, if you read the account very carefully there in Matthew, They brought gifts. They brought some very expensive gifts. They brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh, spices, and money. And they gave them to the one whom they recognized by all of the signs that pointed them there as the king, as a coming king. They were coming before the Son of God, and they recognized that. This was a unique experience. And they brought fine gifts, and they gave them to Christ. They didn't give them to one another. They didn't give them to their friends or their family. They gave their gifts to God, which shows a very high degree of respect that they had for God, for his plan, and for his purpose, as they recognized that being fulfilled there in the birth of Jesus Christ. Wise people today still respect God and give of their best in their whole life of sacrifice to follow and obey the teachings of Christ and to follow his example. Those are just three examples of things that we can learn from the story of Jesus Christ. The meaning of his birth is like all other points and parts of God's teaching and the teaching of Jesus Christ. They show a way of life that is to be lived every day, not just one day of the year, but every day of the year, and to permeate and be a part of our entire life. They are to teach us continually of humility, of service, of sacrifice, of the vast, awesome plan that God is bringing to pass that did include the fact of the birth of the Son of God, the Son of Man coming so that man could ultimately have the opportunity to one time in the future, at one place in the future, become a part of the family of God. So that teaches us many, many things. When we come to this time of year, we see all that goes on around us. We're reminded of how far man has strayed from a knowledge of the truth and the real meaning of God's holy days, God's days that he did give to man in order to be reminded on an annual basis of the purpose of life and what God is bringing to pass. And we see how far we have strayed from that when we get into this. And unfortunately, we see even hostility and some high-strung words come out from all different quarters as people wrangle over and create the kind of Christmas spirit that is really not a spirit that I want to be much of a part of. It's not too silent, it seems, as we go about this particular season. But it's important to keep in mind what are the true lessons to learn from the birth of Jesus Christ, and let those be the guide for our lives throughout the year. For Longitude, I'm Darris McNeely. Keep listening. To interpret that dream later on, you find this in Chapter 2. The dream covered some major events that would occur in the Middle East and Europe from the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon at that time in Daniel's day, until the return of Jesus Christ, yet in our future, when he will establish the kingdom of God on earth. In that dream, and according to that prophecy, and repeated again in Daniel chapter 7 is the prophecy, but we're looking just at this image in Daniel 2, we see that there are four great empires that would dominate those regions of the world: Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. And all of them were represented in that dream by one imposing image of a man. You see that in verses 31 to 33 of Daniel 2. A revived version of the Roman Empire, the last section of that image, represented by the image's feet and toes, is prophesied to come to power shortly before Christ's return. See that in verses 41 through 45. The legacy of Imperial Rome, still very much the heritage of Europe, will supply the model for that end-time power's reach for glory. This final resurrection of the Roman Empire, like the original empire, will be centered in Europe. It appears that it can be seen today in embryonic form in the European Union. Now, that's not to say that all current EU nations will be part of this final configuration that the Bible discusses, but those that choose to participate will combine to form a powerful military force like ancient Rome. It's destined to push its power into the Middle East, subduing Jerusalem and the modern nation of Israel. We have to go to Daniel chapter 11, verses 41 to 45 to understand that. The words of Christ give us a warning that is also very important to understand. And it centers right on Jerusalem, the city that is holy to three great faiths. Christ said in Luke chapter 21, beginning in verse 20, he said, "When you see Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, you will know that its desolation is near. They will fall by the sword and will be taken as prisoners to all the nations. Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. That's a prophecy directly about Jerusalem and its future, and a very important one from Jesus Christ. So we come back and we look at a trend, and we need to ask, could Europe's increasing alliance that backs nations and peoples that are hostile to Israel, coupled with a growing economic and political power, be nudging it further along a road toward becoming a modern version of the Roman Empire, one that will extend its power and control even into the Middle East and Northern Africa? It's an important question, and it's an important trend that we are watching on this podcast, Longitude, as well as in the pages of World News and Prophecy, and on our blog on WNPOnline.org. You need to be keeping in touch with what we're talking about in these media forums here, as well as our other publications available to us, our Good News Magazine and some of our other booklets, such as the Middle East and Bible Prophecy, that takes you through a more detailed study of the Bible prophecies of what this very critical part of the world has in store for the future and what the impact will be for the world. We're looking at Turkey today. And Turkey, as in ancient times, there in its historic geographic position there in Asia Minor, has always been a bridge to empire. And this fascinating country straddles two continents, Europe and Asia. It's where East meets West. It's important to watch. It's through its doors, conquerors have come and gone and will rise again in the future. And so what is taking place today in Turkey, beginning the negotiations as to whether it will enter the European Union as a full member, has some direct impact and interest for us as we study Bible prophecy, as we study the events of the world today and look for the future. For Longitude, I'm Darris McNeely. Keep listening.